hey there. I'm Winter Mitchell Rohrbaugh, filling in for Guy Branum, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over the pop culture we all love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining are journalist and novelist Margaret Wappler.
Hello there, Winter.
Hello, hello. And pop culture scholar and dyke about town, Karen Thompson.
Hey, Winter.
Hi, Rocketeers.
You brought us copies of your book today. We're T-minus countdown.
It's very exciting.
So
We're about 9 days from the book officially being launched into the world at its first event in Seattle.
Excited.
I'm very excited. I'm very happy. I inscribed the books for you, but you're all thanked in there anyway. And I'm just like so thrilled to just get it out there. And so and you are all very much part of the process. This dingy little room is part of the process too.
Did you thank this rug?
Yes. It ties the room together.
Thank you, rug.
Yes. You know who would have loved the year 1991?
Who?
Karen Carpenter.
Oh, hell yeah.
She would have so been into it.
I would have loved her to be suddenly remixed into one of those freestyle anthems.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Or like Stevie B duets with Karen Carpenter. That would have been amazing.
I think she would have liked Mariah, too.
Yeah. She would have liked Mariah.
She totally would have. There would have been some sort of like mix of languidness and energy going on. Yeah.
Well, the good thing we're talking about that, because coming up in this week's show, 1991 in music.
Yes.
I'm very excited for this. It's going to be very grody. Plus, we'll each be sharing our latest jams. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or events have caught our attention this week. Wappler, what's up?
I am just riding Karen's coattails with this one, but I had to chip in on it because I love it. I've only watched about 3 episodes so far because I'm really doling them out, but it is 10:15 of what I speak.
That's all it takes. It's by the time you hit that third episode.
I know. The third one is like, oh, wow. Oh, okay. We're in it, folks. We are in junior high. You know what I mean? So if you don't know what this show is, it's the Hulu show from comedians Maya Erskine and Anna Kunkel, and they are playing themselves. They're like, you know, in their early 30s, but they are playing themselves as junior high kids in the year 2000. And it is just a very honest, raw, evocative look, and very funny too, but evocative look at junior high. Like, as I watch this show, I'm really connected back to, in the most wonderful way, but like connected back to like some of the pain and strife and just horrible discomfort of that time.
The bodily discomfort.
Yes.
And I mean, they are both from NYU's like experimental theater program. Mm-hmm. And you can tell that they know how to work their body in the way that only experimental theater students do, where they're just like hooking their shoulders in to like cover their newly developing breasts. And like, they are just so awkward. And they are awkward in this way that like, the word awkward has kind of been used in this sort of trite way to sum up the way we all felt in junior high. But this is like awkward on the deepest, deepest level that actually means something and isn't just like somebody pushing up their glasses and looking sweaty. It's like real. All these kinds of moments they have of being like disappointed and rejected and like kind of swallowing that down and just keeping it going. It's a wonderful show. It's a really potent combination of dark and light, and I can't recommend it enough.
And the female friendship aspects of it, because it is like that kind of, I think it's that middle school is the space of ambiguity where you're so wrought up with feelings and hormones and desires, and like you don't know what direction to put it in. So your friendships, your same-sex friendships are super ratcheted up.
Yes.
Yeah.
At the same time, like you're discovering your erotic self, but it's totally displaced. Like one of the things about that episode 3 that's most, I think, true is when you see her start to get horny feelings, it's not just about like, you know, the kind of typical things that are supposed to turn you on sexually, but it's like the like a nape that of your neck that becomes a desert landscape or something totally alien and bizarre. And that's kind of what it is.
That's what it's like.
It's like unbridled horniness for things that you can't even locate in the world.
Right. It's like completely buzzing all around you. And it's almost mystical in the show, like the way that it comes about. Like it's, you know, interestingly cross-referenced with like this idea that her grandfather is watching her. And that even has like a certain kind of import, that feeling that when you first start to masturbate of like, who's watching me?
Yeah.
You know, like, is God watching me? Is an elder watching me? What am I doing wrong or right? What am I supposed to be doing right now?
And also, it's like for the Asian American experience, too, like this sense of the ubiquity of the elder, like Asian male relative. Like, that does some shit to your psyche around your sex and sexuality. For real, I can speak from experience.
No, see, the entire season is incredible. Like, I just finished, I don't know how many episodes there are because I don't want to look to see when it's ending. And
yeah,
I don't.
I want to say 10, but I could be wrong.
Okay, so then I think I might be around like 7 or 8.
Yeah, me too. And I haven't, like, I won't watch more.
I won't watch more because it's, I have to process.
Yes.
Even for them to be in a decade, maybe like almost 8 or 9 years past what my experience was in middle school, it still felt so incredibly relevant just being in that experience and all the things and, you know, not being, I think that they don't play up their dorkiness that much because I think that there is an acceptance level, like there is a comfort level because they have like a bunch of people that they relate to, right? And I was appreciative of the fact that it wasn't like we're the dorks of the school or the duffs of the school. I like that they are they have like their own thing going on. But that episode, episode 3, is so uncomfortable because I've never felt anything more relatable on television, not in recent time.
Mm-hmm.
Like just the awkwardness of discovering that this thing makes me feel really good and I want to do it all the time and there's never a good place to do it and everyone's always interrupting me and I just want to just explore myself without your bullshit.
And she doesn't even look like happy doing it.
No,
90% of the time,
of
it's like this complete demonic urge or something.
Yes.
Where she's just like, I just have to know.
I just have to know. So I don't know. I'm glad that you're up on game finally with that Whopper.
Yeah.
That show is just
and also just to add that, like, one of the things I like about TV in the last year from Sex Education to Pen 15 is that they've given us like adolescent girl sexuality in its rawness.
Yes.
In a way that's not like super protective or chaste or just like about romance, but like about like dirty stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a great development. And I hope that more female creators of shows like continue to run with it.
Amen.
I hope so. That's much more authentic and connected to what I experience versus all this 16 Candles, Pretty in Pink bullshit.
Yeah.
I thought my life was going to be like that, and thank God it wasn't. God bless. KT, what's up?
So I've been behind in my This Is Us watching, in part because, you know, there are a lot of problems with that show. We've all admitted it. People have fallen in and out of it. But they just, and this isn't the most recent episode to air this week. I'm one episode behind, but I was quietly stunned by an episode titled R&B. That just happened last week for Randall and Beth. And number one, Beth as a character deserves all of the focus she's getting this season. Susan Kelechi Watson deserves every ounce of screen time. And I think that the creators have been savvy to know that her story needs to be fleshed out more. But, you know, exploring also and deconstructing really the kind of perfect relationship that Randall and Beth seem to exemplify in this context, and watching that how even the most solid foundational, solid as a rock relationships have these moments of erosion and resentment in them, to me was so deeply affecting and touching, especially, you know, being married, being in a long-term relationship and like, you know, having experienced the ways in which, you know, the different ways in which we grow at different stages of our lives can bear tremendous impact. That was really, really fantastic. And it made me cry while I was on the elliptical machine. All to say, though, I mean, so the premise of this episode is that we get a real the previous episode leaves off with Randall and Beth having a tremendous fight around who's showing up for the other or not showing up for the other. And Randall says terrible things and leaves a voicemail and just basically like eviscerates her. And this is an episode that starts with the resuming of that fight. And then they get into flashbacks when they met. And she's like, we've been having this fight since we met.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how many of us who have been in long-term relationships can say that? Who've been through couples therapy, have said that. We've been having the problem that you have at the incipience of your relationship is the thing that repeats itself. And one of the genius things about this episode is that the thing that can seem charming or cute or romantic or a thing that can be a solution in different circumstances at some point ceases to be the solution. And you just realize we need to fucking resolve this issue. And I think for anyone who's, you know, experiences that deep abiding love and respect for another person, you get to see all these beautiful moments from like when they decide to get together, when they decide to get married or engaged and then married. And then you see, you know, like they've had a pretty decent life together as the show has depicted. But nothing about relationships has had this same kind of searing realism to me in popular culture since Blue Valentine.
Oh, wow.
I mean, or also, like, and also, frankly, those episodes of Blackish from last season, the previous season, when Dre and Beau start to have their marital issues. I'm glad that popular culture is taking this on in a way that isn't sensationalized, that isn't always like problems in a relationship are about external factors, some hot person coming in and interrupting it. In fact, like, the problems are like very much daily and mundane, but can feel deeply significant. It can be about like also exploring how, since feminism, women have, you know, like begun to realize like the extent to which they are expected to keep certain things together to nurture other people's dreams, or vice versa. People in general have, you know, there's a person who's keeping the ship together as someone is pursuing their dreams. And I think that that's more and more relevant to our generations of couples and whatever. I give it up to you, This Is Us, for nailing that situation.
Yeah, there was just this Washington Post article last week that was about there being a 30-year low in the amount of sex people are having.
Oh,
like,
wow.
We are just not fucking anymore. And it's not just, like, old people, like you might think it, you know, be like baby boomers who are maybe just getting a little too old to do it. That's not it. It's, like, people in
even
their 20s.
Even with Viagra, yeah.
Even people that are, who are, like, typically the most sexually active population is actually people in their 30s and 40s who are married. And those people have fallen off a bit, but people in their 20s have really fallen off, mm-hmm. which makes me tremendously sad.
That makes me sad, too.
I know.
That's when you're supposed to be fucking.
I know, exactly.
Anything.
It's almost a crime not to be.
It's I'm confused by it.
But I think that it is because of these different factors, like, around, like, it's also, like, one of the things that, like, they discuss is the management of Randall's anxiety.
Yeah.
Of mental health issues. And that's Yay. Something that's also not discussed
yep.
when you're talking about, like, a lot of love stories. It's just, like, about, like, how you meet, how you relate to each other. And there's no factoring in of, like, the stress and demands that mental health issues take in partnerships.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, the article, I mean, they only got into the reasons or speculations a little bit, but I honestly felt like this is happening because life is so stressful for men and women. And it's sort of like nobody has, like, the emotional bandwidth anymore to, like, hold the relationship together after, like, the jobs and, like, no health insurance and all of these things. And I just think, like, actually just the daily fabric of life is, like you said, is what kind of wears people down and, like, mm-hmm. actually factors a lot more into marriage than, like, the sexy other appearing suddenly at
yeah,
work or whatever.
For sure. And I appreciate that. And it's also just, like, because everyone, all the big three in This Is Us are the same age as my partner.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like, it's also, like, understanding, like, that that's her kind of, like,
contemporary,
you know, cohort, her contemporaries from
that's
yeah.
originally why I liked the
yeah.
show.
And so yeah. I mean, I think that it's, like, as a show in general, it's writing its way, but it's really lovely to see, again, Beth get more focus and just to see some of these other things instead of, like, the kind of melodrama of the other stories
right.
centering.
Right, right. My All About is really simple. Two words, one legend. Celine Dion.
Oh, my. She's good to bring up in a 1991 show.
100%. I got to see her today and ask her a question, which was awesome.
I was so jealous.
It was awesome.
I was like,
I put
holy.
It on my Twitter.
I feel like her eyelids would just be constantly fluttering like butterflies all the
no,
time.
No, she
is
that
how it is? No.
Let me tell you something
Dead
about
stare?
Her.
Dead stare?
This, she don't play.
Okay.
And not in that way that's, like, annoying, like, she don't play. She don't play, like, she's a boss without being obnoxious. She's charming.
Yeah.
Funny, light,
present,
positive. you need an icon like this. I want her to run for president. Forget all these other,
you know. She's going to have to fabricate that birth certificate.
I forgot about it. She's also Canadian.
Take off.
That probably accommodates for like 80% of her personality.
Yeah.
She's a really great woman. And I had the pleasure of being invited to an announcement she made today at Ace Hotel downtown. She's releasing a new album. Her album is going to be co-written by Sia. This was like...
Let me just take
a step back. This was a plentiful afternoon, and it was almost like I went to church. Forget Kanye's church. Forget New Jack church that Bieber goes to. This was some church. She came out on time, sang Pitch Perfect.
Yes.
Yeah.
Took some comments from fans. Didn't make anybody feel terrible. Wasn't snarky, but was funny. Was funny, but snarky, but funny. She announced this album. This is her first tour in 10 years. She's going to every major city, including Tulsa, Oklahoma. I just feel like she is everything that we need right now from middle-aged divas.
Yeah, for sure.
With so many of us losing legends and people going off in these mysterious ways and sort of dipping out and not... sort of returning from whence they came or as they were.
Or pulling a Barbara, my icon, and saying some dumb
shit.
Yeah,
it's just like you need someone who's like, I relate to you, I follow you, I get you, I understand where you're at, I'm meeting you at your level, let me bring you some love. By the way, she calls exactly what my grandma did and my mom. My Heart Will Goes On, she calls it the Titanic song. You know what I mean? Like she... gets who she is and where she fits and what it means. And she's humble and she appreciates it. And she wants to give you 10%. She wants to give you 10%.
That's all you deserve.
Well, sometimes, like, you know, maybe that's all we have the capacity for these days.
She wants to give you 150% every time. But she's honest and realistic about it. And I just really appreciated everything that she had to give us today in the middle of downtown Los Angeles for an hour. She gave me more than I've gotten from... hours of being around some people that are much more, you know, out there than she is. She gave me a ton of entertainment in an hour.
You are the fourth person now that I know who has seen Celine Dion live, who isn't necessarily a fan, but has seen her live and compares it to church and has like a conversion.
Yep. Convert. Like, I'm out. I was crying, Wappler.
Everyone says. That, like,
I didn't know that it was going to hit me the way it did. As soon as she opened her voice up, I'm thinking about it now. I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
It got you.
And by the way, it was like ayahuasca. I started seeing shit and unlocking memories of things that I was I wasn't even ready to deal with this right now.
And you didn't puke, which without is what scares me about ayahuasca.
Without the puking.
Can we, like, make a pact? Can we do, like...
Yes. It's already yes.
Can we do, like, a Pop Rocket road trip to Vegas to see Celine at the Caesars Palace?
I haven't been to Vegas in a long time now, and I am ready.
I think we need to do it. I think that we just need to commit to it. We're there.
Yeah. And I can so make this happen.
We'll do it for somebody's birthday. Let's do it. Let's do it.
No, let's actually do it because I can make this happen.
Okay, let's do it. Maybe we can talk to her and we can have a whole transformative experience.
Oh, she already loved me. She said she loved me.
Oh my God.
So that's
because
the first step.
You love me.
Okay. That's all you're going to get. You're listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back to talk 1991 and music after this.
Hey everybody, this is J. Keith Van Stratton, host of Go Fact Yourself, a live game show here on the Maximum Fun Network. Make sure to listen to our next episode of Go Fact Yourself with guest Kurt Brownowler.
I did a show in Flagstaff, Arizona, where the venue just didn't list that the show existed.
Amazing.
And it is the smallest crowd that I've ever done a full hour of stand-up for. It was three people.
Oh my God.
And Sarah Schaefer.
Yes, I love crafting. It's my hobby. I have a craft nook in my home.
You do?
I do. It has all my supplies displayed in an adorable manner.
Wow.
Yes.
Yes, applause.
Applause for a nook.
That's Go Fact Yourself here at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Winter Mitchell Rohrbaugh, if you haven't heard. With me in the studio,
Margaret Wappler
and Karen Tongson.
And we're going to talk about 1991 in music.
Woo-woo.
Oh boy, what a year. This year was interesting for a number of reasons. I think we were coming, this is just my editorialization. You guys feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but I felt like we were coming out of a very cantankerous period. From 88-ish on until we got to 91, there was, I don't know what specifically it was because I was young, but there was a lot of commotion, cultural commotion, okay, which I feel like we're going through right now. And I don't know if it's just typical cultural commotion because it's the end of a decade and we're going into a new decade. And there's this, you know, it's not like going into a new year. There's a sense of promise and hope when you go into a new year. But then when you're going into, you're like, you're putting all bets in on a new decade. That shit just sort of shifts around. So we get to 91 and all of a sudden there's this explosion of grunge, new jack, the explosion of radio pop, like what do you call it? Not songstresses, but they were like, it wasn't like the...
It was a proto-Lilith, like zygote Lilith Fair.
Yeah, like you, these weren't the girls that were going to take their bras off and grow their underarm hair out, but they were definitely going to...
Sing harmonies
and maybe let you hit it on the third date.
Well, look, I mean, true. I just taught a unit, like, basically... The thing that precedes 1991, the most world historical event, of course, is the fall of the Berlin Wall,
right,
the end of the Cold War. You've got, like, you know, basically George Herbert Walker Bush coming in and, you know, trying to make a break from the Reagan era and being an internationalist president and being like, there's a new world order, you know? And so there's a new world order.
A thousand plates of love.
Exactly. his thousand points. So there was like a kind of strange optimism that was in circulation.
This would have been the year that Clinton was campaigning.
So, yeah. So Clinton would have started campaigning around the end of 1991, maybe the beginning of 92. I can't remember when he declared. But like, it's just sort of like... what you had was this sense that the world was shifting. This way that we knew the world for 50 years, basically, was anew. And so you get, like, all of these anthemic songs that are and cheesy songs heralding a new day, a new set of possibilities. And it's also the moment where, like, I think that genres and the kind of monoculture is just starting to really splinter, and where you're getting like the power of college radio in different markets, and you're getting like these kind of alternative sounds intermingling also with a pop radio that I think was the most diverse in a long time.
Yeah.
You know, I think 100% what you guys have said is true. I would just add to it that I think we were also coming off of this 80s, like, uber capitalist, make money, Wall Street, like, everything is about the alpha male, this idea that, like, to conquer is to make a shit ton of money and to be really uber masculine.
And severe. Remember and shoulder severe. Pads?
Yes, yes, exactly.
Hair,
even
hair
like,
gel.
Even in
aerodynamic.
Even women back then, it's like, just to look at the way women dressed in the corporate environment was like, blood red, shoulder pads, like, don't fuck with me, you know? And then we get to the 90s and something else comes in that's like this real desire for people to be authentic, define that however you will, but like this desire to be authentic, the sort of beta male energy of like the grunge movement comes up of like, let's not be the alpha male type, let's be sensitive, let's talk about our feelings, let's talk about like depression and anxiety and like have this depth to our music. I think I agree too with like the pop radio is actually like a very diverse palette at that point. Like, you know, there's so many factors going on from like New Jack to like super pop to REM and U2
to Michael Bolton
to like all these kind of like
seed-ins, really, like, square stuff,
these seed-ins from like Europe and Australia, like Divinyls, I Touch Myself and Roxette and like all these kind of other groups that, you know, I miss sort of the energy of like anything went at that time.
Yes.
Like you didn't know what the fuck was going to be a big song in 91. Like it really did have this like kind of chaotic freeform energy that was like international and open, just open.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, so if the severity of the 80s ended, also the complete and pure, like, and also like stripped down MTV Unplugged 90s of it hadn't yet quite started.
Yeah.
So this is the kind of, this is like the growing your hair out, like this is my hair growing out phase. Mm-hmm. 1991 is the moment where culture is doing that to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of like, it looks strange, it looks awkward. And the sounds of 1991, I think, like have that bridge between kind of the like deep synthesized coked out sounds of the 80s with the hair metal of the 80s, mm-hmm. like starting to kind of coalesce into this brassy like drum machines that sound like people hitting trash cans underneath a pillow, mm-hmm. like sound that was ubiquitous in whatever genre you were listening to on the radio at the time. And you know, I will say just personally, that was the year that I graduated from high school. I'm class of 91.
Hey.
Class of 1991. So as the awkward...
1990. That was so...
yeah. That was like a little Rhythm Nation.
Yeah,
that was
exactly. A little bit of Alana. You were so Alana Glazer just
so
then.
Like in terms of the awkward hair growing out thing, like I was sorting that out too. Because I was like, I took my senior photo early in the part, like the beginning of the school year in 91, and my hair was very big, but by the time 91 ended, there wasn't any hairspray in it. It was just like long and natural and like flowing. And the same with like the shoulder pads of like that late 80s, like suddenly became mesh sleeves on everything, like a blazer with the mesh sleeves. You know what I mean? Like they were the transparent sleeves.
Yes.
Yeah. So then that seemed very classy to me. So I don't know. I mean, maybe that's just my class background, but whatever.
I just remember I was in the fifth grade, which is so embarrassing. But I just remember that there was, you know, I was committed to an aesthetic that I thought that I had to shift completely by the time I got to sixth grade. And because of the music that came out that launched in 91, which was grunge, the grunge era, I was like, by the seventh grade, I was like, oh, yeah, I can just totally go back to what I was wearing, because I was completely wearing plaid and boy shirts and jeans, like long ripped jeans. I was already wearing that because I was just such a tomboy that I did not like. I thought my mom and all the women in my family were like, if you continue to wear those clothes, people will think that you're just
gay.
A boy. Yes. Thank you. I didn't want to say that, but that's 100%. What they were saying. And I was like, I don't really care what anybody thinks of me. This is what I'm most comfortable in. And it turns out I was right about myself. Can you believe it? So I just felt like when 91 hit, in fifth grade, I was still struggling with, you know, I only want to wear my dad's football jerseys. I only want to wear like what all these guys are singing about. And then I was also struggling with the feelings of liking boys. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to, I was like, well, how do I be feminine, but like can still kind of be myself? And that's why I credit, and this is obviously after that, TLC, with being like kind of, I call them soft thugs, because yes. They were like, they were very much like,
they did do femme thug.
They femme thug. And it was like, we're like totally, you know, into men or whatever, but like, we're also like a little bit of a hood rat. And I just felt like 91 certainly gave a lot of women that I grew up with license to be kind of like, you know, even if we're cishet, we're still affecting like this quote unquote like masculine aesthetic, mm-hmm. because that's what we like. That's what we wanted to wear. We wanted to wear Raiders jackets. We wanted to do that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this music spoke to that era for me.
Well, and that was the whole thing that I think people don't realize about the 90s, at least like the early 90s, like androgyny was like a cool mm-hmm. idea, you know, like the CK1 perfume / cologne that was for any gender to wear, any orientation. There was this idea, you know, Kate Moss with her very like slim, boyish kind of figure, like a model who didn't exhibit the usual like busty curves. Like those were the kinds of influences we were all seeing. Like, you know, Marc Jacobs eventually borrows like all the grunge look and puts it on the runway. Mm-hmm. Like it was mainstream by the time it sort of spun itself around. And I think, you know, in 91, it was like, two albums dropped. I mean, if we're going to talk about grunge for a minute, like Nirvana's Nevermind and Pearl Jam's 10. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I was between you guys in age. I was a freshman in high school. And so I feel like that was like a real quick lay of the land for someone. Are you into Pearl Jam or are you into Nirvana?
Exactly.
Which is funny to me now because I really don't see, there's not that much of a difference. And in fact, they sort of like personnel like totally crosses over in terms of the bands and who the bands played with and all that kind of thing. But all the same, it felt like a certain line in the sand where Pearl Jam, I think at that point, was kind of considered a little more commercial, mainly because 10 dropped, 91, mm-hmm. towards the end, like August or something. Yeah. And like five of those songs would go on to become number one hits. And I think it's a great album. And I actually like, looking now at the whole grunge landscape, I have to give it to Eddie Vedder because he has survived and like triumphed in the sense that he has stayed really true to himself. Mm-hmm. He's not let, I mean,
stayed holistically like whole.
But, yeah. I mean, what I want to say though is just like he stayed true to himself and like he, I mean, it's so sad that a lot of these guys lost themselves.
He was always a rock dude, though. I mean, in a way where it was like, I think that Nirvana, Kurt, those folks, like, were more invested in kind of experimental, like, you know, like, kind of, and I think that Pearl Jam was not a part of that Olympia scene, not a part of that, like, vibe that was going on in the same way, and just had more the kind of, a different kind of entry point into culture.
Yeah, I mean, I was even just thinking of it too in terms of just like no addiction in Eddie Vedder's past.
Right.
I mean, nothing that, I mean, it's so sad, but like Chris Cornell and other people, like, you know, suicide or something claimed them, and Eddie Vedder has just managed to stay like, you know, he's a survivor, essentially.
Can I say, though, as a super sentient person in 1991, so, like, the first half of 1991 was my last semester of high school. So that is when I feel like there was reveling in deep pop. And also, it was a very deep R&B moment on the radio. And I think that that was a situation where a lot of us were listening to things like the theme song, my graduation night, like, after high school graduation, when we were at a party drinking at somebody's house when we weren't supposed to, the thing that was on repeat and on loop.
Let me guess.
Tick tock, you don't stop. Tick tock, tick tock, you don't stop.
It is amazing that, like, we probably all know, like, the Pearl Jam hits, but then this hit equally well. Like, I can do every vocal inflection that Color
91.
Me Bad does in that song.
Yes. That's what's magical about 91.
First half of 91, it's Color Me Bad. It's, like, it's even fucking, like, Amy Grant, Wilson Phillips. Like, it's all of these, like, kind of poppy groups. And, you know, and then by the time I start my first semester in college, that is when I'm, like, into grunge, like, again, the kind of like the quick swivel of like first half of the year, it's just like saturated with all this great pop that I know we're going to talk about more, including, you know, like I Want to Sex You Up and whatever, and CNC Music Factory played my grad night, which we can talk about a little bit more. But by the time I'm a freshman in college, just a few months later in 1991, that's when I'm like, it's REM, it's Nirvana, and it is a little band from LA called the Red Hot Chili Peppers. What I got, you gotta get it, put it in you. The soundtrack to my first college orgy is really the soundtrack to everyone contracting HPV.
Oh my God.
It really is. I almost feel genital wart starting right now. I mean, I do think that, like, this album is pretty untouchable in their catalog. Like, I didn't really come into them, like, before this album, and I didn't really stick around afterwards.
Yeah.
But this album...
Balderdash. They get
you?
Better. I remember when the first time when that... In which video was it? When Flea and Anthony kiss each other?
Oh, yeah.
And I remember thinking... I remember being like, no one really addressed it on MTV because that's how MTV rolled when it back when it used to be cool.
Yeah.
And I used to think that was like, this is what I'm talking about. Like, these guys who ushered in an era where you started questioning anything, and I appreciated, you know, when we start talking, we go from these guys and we start getting a little bit more into the pop, you start seeing like the sexually evocative and provocative levels that pop stars were willing to go into. We get to Janet Jackson, Love Will Never Do. That video was the first time we saw her new body, sexy body.
Mm-hmm.
Antonio Sabato Jr., who voted for Trump, forget him. It never happened. Paula Abdul, Rush. She claims in credits to this day that she discovered Keanu Reeves, and that was a beautiful, she does. that is a true story. George Michael, Freedom 90, him essentially you know,
amazing song
between faith and freedom, talking about his sexuality and leaning into it,
or just starting to like chip at the sexuality.
Was
thing.
Faith before freedom?
Faith was before freedom.
Yeah, but I feel like Faith was like very much like him. Like I'm breaking the window open, and no, now but
that
I'm
was all very
inside.
Much like I'm,
innuendo.
No, I will say as a longtime
but
follower,
freedom is like the labels messing with him too, right?
No, I will say as a longtime follower of George Michael, like. Faith is at the moment, and like that album where he's like chipping away, and like he's starting to like be like, I like Asian girls, which is a sort of gay gateway to I'm gay. Mm. And then suddenly it's like freedom, you know?
So, from Asian girls to freedom.
Take these eyes and make them true. All we have to say is that I don't belong to you, and you don't belong to
me. You know, it's, can I just say something really quick? Like, in some ways, I feel like because no one was supposed to talk about their sexuality, really, like, there was a lot more coding going on that was interesting.
True.
You know what I mean? Like, people were kind of slipping messages in there that you could really interpret, like, any which way you wanted. Whereas now, I feel like there's almost more of this, like, put your, you know, draw a line in the sand.
Yeah.
Like, who are you? Say who you are, what you like.
Well, we can't forget that Madonna's Truth or Dare came out around the same time, right?
Yeah.
So it's just sort of, because I think I saw that when I was a senior in high school. So it was like in that same 1991 era. And so it was like, you know, and it was a moment like where I also like, I did not come out until 1992.
Oh.
And I did not come out to myself until 1992, really. But all of this stuff was in the air. It was in the ether. And so hearing stuff like Freedom 90, watching Madonna's Truth or Dare, and then eventually, like, honestly, like True Confessions, the first girl I ever kissed, her big jam was Jesus Jones's Right Here, Right Now, which is a 1991 song. I mean, like, whatever. She listens to the show occasionally. Shout out, Lisa. I mean, because it was like, you know, I think that people who were old right now, I think that people who were my age at that time, I think it was just sort of like, it was like, you know, because you all were younger, but like it was like we were supposed to be kind of adulty. But we were supposed to be more like, and like we were supposed to declare sexuality, intention, those things at that point. And so
you guys
that,
had
you know,
a lot more freedom to do that. And I really want to talk about what is it about 91 that really sticks with us, considering the diverse amount of artists that we were presented.
MTV is not just MTV. It's Yo MTV Raps. It's like 120
Total
Minutes.
Request
it's like
Live.
Total Request Live. It's like MTV, if you just track that, is splintering into all these iterations that are hailing different people and that are creating different sounds. At the same time, I think that we were still kind of culturally omnivorous at that moment, where like I know that, and I think that it was one of the most permissive moments in pop culture, where in the 80s I was called a wannabe, like, because I said I liked Duran Duran and because I liked Duran Duran and Ozzy Osbourne at the same time. And like someone's like, you're a wannabe. But by the time you get to 1991, it's like you're expected to like enjoy Color Me Bad and Paula Abdul and at the same time listen to R.E.M., or get a little hint of like some, like basically these subcultures percolating into the mainstream, like Delight.
Yeah.
And like, and the song that like, is, you know, Groove is in the Heart, man.
I think we have to play a little bit of Groove in the Heart.
Yes.
And then I want to talk about it.
Please.
The chills that you spill up my back keep me filled with satisfaction when we're done. Satisfaction of what's to come. Walls on the bridge. My succotash, wish.
This song to me is like the total synthesis of like what the 90s was trying to do in terms of like sampling dance club energy and pulling in like a young and old sensibility. Like there are tons of samples in this song. I mean, if you just go and research it, you'll find a bunch of different references, like things that were in the movie Blow Up from 1966.
Wow.
And like, you know, it's just dotted with those kind of things. Bootsy Collins is playing bass. Q-Tip contributes a big verse. It's The two people that are the main core of Delight, actually, I should say it's three. Lady Keir is being like the singer in this song. Like, yeah. They are total holdovers from like gay club culture. Like, they loved, I mean, she was in a hetero relationship with one of the guys in the band, but they still like very much infiltrated that world, were beloved by that world, were playing this song in gay clubs before it actually got recorded and released. So it's just this real beautiful melding, I think, of like 90s energy. And it's one of these songs that like whenever it came on for me at that point in time, it's like I just dropped everything and started dancing.
100%.
It's just so fucking good. It is just like a flawless song still to this day.
The first out gay people in my life were always dancing to Delight. And we're always like, so yes, of course, Madonna, but like the thing that is most salient for me of that period is Delight. And it's just like, yeah. Oh, and Brand New Heavies, that same kind of like, you know, acid jazzy soul, like whatever, that kind of pastiche of postmodern like sounds.
Yeah. I mean, when I look at the song from Madonna that was big in 91, it was Justify My Love, yeah. Which I feel like is not a very good Madonna song personally.
It's not a very good Madonna song, but that entire era of her, I don't know what.
The
truly
sex book.
She was going through. Oh yeah, I, which I finally
the
got a copy.
The sex book is a whole other thing.
Yeah. I finally got a copy.
Chef's kiss
but
on
mwah,
that.
like it took me 20 years to get it. 30 years. whatever. I just feel like Madonna. I was reading recently about how Madonna's album True Blue was about her marriage. And then Erotica was post Sean, still smarting off of that and exploring her sexuality in like a crazy, she was still going through like this crazy sexual like renaissance where she was exploring like what it was her version of freedom. And I think that was what I was hinting at. All of these pop idols were starting, you know, that's why it's interesting that they talk about how Paula Abdul, you know, Promise of a New Day didn't perform because she was trying to be so much like everyone and be provocative. They were like, this isn't working for me because now suddenly we have a new Janet. We have like a brand new Janet that we've never seen before. And we have a brand new Madonna we've never seen before. And we have a brand new George Michael, people who are better artists that are doing something different. Yeah. And apologies, we're going to have to put you aside. We have the emergence of Mariah Carey. She has like three singles and they just keep coming and it's ones and it's ones. And
I mean, 91 is like Mariah Carey's
year.
Like she drops her debut, her self-titled debut. There's three or four songs from that
never
that just
saw
race
her
up
coming.
The charts. Yeah, and like, you know, she's kind of, and I remember when she drops, it's like she is almost put to us as like this prodigy, you know, this like five
dolphin
octave
tones that they talk about, those up that upper range, the Mariah's dolphin tones.
Right, like all of her range and her reach and like and the fact that she would just stay in the studio at that point, like she kind of wasn't a touring artist yet because she was a bit scared. I mean, eventually they like pushed her out like later that year. But like word is she had a lot of stage fright. She didn't want to do it. She just like when in the studio, she could just control her voice.
Yeah.
And that's so important to her because she's such a technician, you know. But like what a year for her. I feel like she's interesting to sort of pin up against the other sort of pop divas at the time. One of whom is Janet Jackson, who is coming off of Rhythm Nation, which is like this big, like New Jack Swing, like, you know, Jimmy Jam kind of like.
Terry Lewis just killing it.
Yeah, it's just killing it. And like, it's an amazing album. I think the last Love Will Never Do is like pretty much the last single off that
pretty
album
much.
That charts.
And that's. Do we have that?
So one of the things I love about that sound that exemplifies is that 1991...
Like that hard percussion.
But it also gave us the brightest treble. There's so much treble in all the freaking music.
Yeah.
From that to baby, baby. And like that same like jangly like kind of rattly percussion
sound. But it's designed
sound.
To keep you going. That's yeah. what I felt like. It yeah. was designed to keep you peppy.
High NRG.
High NRG. Like Rhythm is a Dancer. I don't yeah, know if that yeah. was this year or not. There was one song that we mentioned in here. Wait, because you know my memory's back. Because I'm getting elderly. Gonna Make You Sweat.
Yeah.
Gonna Make You Sweat.
CNC fucking Music Factory.
Everybody dance now.
CNC Music Factory played at my grad night at Disneyland. They were on that stage at like that kind of space, like jam, like cafeteria thing or whatever, where Whoa. Like the stage lifts up from underground. There was that other song, Things That Make You Go, Hmm.
Oh, God.
And you're all, chill, baby, baby, chill, baby, baby, wait. But one thing I wanted to say about Mariah Carey, though, is that, number one, she was like... So she was being like groomed as this R&B princess, right? And but you knew that there was something more that was going to happen yeah. to her. So like it was like she was inaugurating the decade of the 90s and she would be the star of the 90s from then on. But also like number two, the fashion statement of Mariah, when I talked about the black blazer with shoulder pads to the black blazer with mesh sleeves, that's Mariah doing that. And number three, in terms of sexuality, like I knew that the last man that I tried to like cis man that I yeah. tried to date, like really loved Mariah Carey. And then like he wanted me to sing backup with him when he was singing Mariah Carey songs when we were, and then I was like, huh. And so yeah, so that was basically like the kind of like introduction like, hey, to our man. Sexualities. And then he became Devonda the drag queen. So there you go.
Beautiful.
Yeah. You guys were talking about the innovation of the early 90s.
Yeah.
But let me ask, what then do we make of the fact that there was also this kind of holdover, like really schmaltzy pop music from Amy Grant to Wilson Phillips to like all of these like kind of, you know.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, Wilson Phillips, I don't think turned in their strongest schmaltz this year. Oh. I'm much more of a hold on kind yeah. of girl. And this was kind of like
You're in love.
Yeah, it was like a late.
That's the way.
It was a it late offering. And I just wasn't that impressed. Amy Grant, I still can't hear that song.
We cannot forget that Bette Midler's From a Distance
yes.
was also a huge top 100 hit.
Was that for the boys? I will allow Bette to come in there.
But it was the same. They're basically the same song. They are. The same opening.
Listen, we also have to remember that Iraqi War was happening.
Yes.
So people needed some
The
first Gulf War.
First Gulf War. There was a lot of discord because this was the first time I think that
first time I fall.
No, I think this is the first time that like post Vietnam, if you know young people like you know yeah. your age, it's post Vietnam, you really had a recognition of what war did. You know, one thing that I was very much because I went to a predominantly black school. But the one thing that we could all agree in middle school, by the time these songs filled and built up, is we can agree that we all loved Apocalypse Now by Tupac. We can all agree that mm-hmm. we were obsessed with Naughty by Nature and Tribe. But Boyz II Men's, Motown Philly, Ooh. And Jodeci's Forever My Lady. And for that matter, Mary J. Blige's debut album.
Oh, yeah.
Which I don't remember if it's 90, 91, or 92, but it was definitely in that era. This is... specifically these people, these groups brought in New Jack Swing.
Yeah.
Man, they were great.
Okay, anyway, sorry.
So good. Well, I mean, what was so brilliant about them is they had that whole, like, you know, four-part harmony, Philly, yes. barbershop yes. kind of sound, but then, like, welded to this super modern, like, synthesizer-driven, like, New Jack sound. I mean, I think...
like, and that was totally Color Me Bad's wheelhouse, too. It's like, they, like, kind of capitalized on all of this from that to the freestyle stuff.
I personally feel like, too, that Color Me Bad and I Want to Sex You Up was mm-hmm. basically the first draft of Dick in a Box. Mm. Like, I really
oh,
do
totally.
Think
Everybody
that
agrees,
that...
yeah. But amidst all that stuff, though, because like, I will say this, too, as someone who's a nerd who was in choir in high school...
Me, too.
Is that all the boys... boys would sing Boys to Men. They would sing Color Me Bad and All for One. And so that it was a real moment for that kind of like, it's like a
they
kind of
that's
that
they
jacked
thought.
Up doo-wop like
yes.
post, like, you know,
because
and it
that's
was
that's what
just
they
like,
thought that girls liked. Because yeah. girls like that.
And there was a lot of like romancing happening
yeah.
in the 90s, you know.
Well, and I just want to pay some attention to A Tribe Called Quest, who had Low End Theory drop in 91, which
yeah.
was one of those albums that like really hit hard and was so seminal for all kinds of like 90s, if you want to call it backpacker hip hop, whatever you want to call it. Fife Dawg.
Oh.
Rest in peace.
I want to give a shout out to this song, again related to choir, but also like as a song, it speaks so much to my experience, like because it's become basically a Filipino standard to anyone who was born from like my age onward knows this by heart. And it's also like kind of the death knell of hair metal where everybody's getting serious and making melodic stuff. And there was a band and they would be called One Hit Wonders. I think they were in the end, but their album did pretty well, Porno Graffiti, and they were called Extreme.
That was the name of their album.
Yeah, it was sad. I had that on cassette, and I used to listen to it in my mom's Chevy Blazer. And the song, of course, that I'm talking about is More Than Words. How easy it would be to show.
We have a listener call in with their favorite song. I want to give a shout out to Katie from Peoria, Illinois. What's going on in Peoria?
Peoria! What plays in Peoria, baby?
What plays in Peoria? This is her call in to Guy's Mom.
In 1991, my 12-year-old self was so in love with Nelson. They were just the most awesome ever. I think I wore out their tape. It was sixth grade, and he was just infatuated. Anyway. After the rain washes away the tears and all the pain, only after the rain
yeah.
will you live again.
Yeah, Katie.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. I hope you have a wonderful week, and I'm very much looking forward to the show on Hits from 1991. Thanks. Bye.
She
yes,
was in the same
Katie.
Vein, exactly. You got your Nelsons, you got your Extremes. And that is, like, they're the in-betweens of, like, you know, all that weird pop stuff and then, like, the grunge stuff.
It's
so like,
true.
It's like they're the kind of strange, like, the middle place, middle earth of 1991.
They're 100% the middle earth of 1991.
The wonderfully sunken
They're 100% the middle earth of 1991. Somebody loved it. It was very popular, but it wasn't you.
Yeah.
But it was there, but it
was
wasn't you. Before we go, we made a mixtape, a 1991 mixtape that's on Spotify that has all of our favorite jams from that era. I mean, it spans, as you've heard on this episode,
it's eclectic.
It's eclectic.
And there's so much more that we couldn't cover. And also, like, we should shout out Alonzo for giving us this inspiration on
how to make the mixtape. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So thanks, Alonzo.
Thank you, Alonzo. You know us better than we know ourselves. You're listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back after this.
I listen to Reading Glasses because Bria and Mallory have great tips.
You're a comics reader and you want to use a library-connected app, you can try out Hoopla.
I listen for the author interviews.
I'm mad at myself that I waited as long as I did to start reading Joan Didion.
They give me reading advice I didn't even know I needed.
If you go in person to an event and go up to an author or a filmmaker or anybody and tell them what you don't like about their work, you're a trash baby.
I understand you didn't like Heroes Season 3. That's fine. I don't actually need to know that information. I'm Bria Grant.
And I'm Mallory O'Mara. We're Reading Glasses, and we solve all your bookish problems every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Winter Mitchell-Rohrbaugh. With me in the studio,
Margaret Wappler.
And Karen Tongson.
Every week on Pop Rocket, we'll be asking our panel, what's your current jam, Wappler?
Well, I had to get the hell out of 1991 after this, and I went straight to Billie Eilish, who is this young 17-year-old musician making music with her 21-year-old brother, Phineas. And she, I'm sure all the baby Rocketeers know her. She's like huge on Instagram, huge on Twitter, just huge in general. They finally released their album, When We All Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go? And this is the song, Bad Guy.
Be toes creeping around like no one knows. Think you're so criminal. Bruises on both my knees for you. Don't say thank you. Oh, please, I do what I want when I'm wanting to. My soul, so cynical. So you're a tough guy, like a really rough guy. Just can't get enough guy.
Everything's a little creepy and goth with Billie Eilish. And
sexy whispers.
Yes, a lot of sexy whispers. Check it out.
Yeah, definitely. Sorry.
All that enthusiasm, KT.
Sorry, I was distracted.
What about you, KT? Who is your jam?
You know, I didn't leave the sphere of 1991, and it's because, like, I just actually rediscovered the song and I was so into it, and it's in the spirit of those songs that are in that shuffly feel good vein from people like Amy Grant and Wilson Phillips. And this is Kathy Dennis, who I used to call Kathy Dennis, from her album Move to This, which came out in 1990, but this song was a hit in 91, and it's called Too Many Walls.
Too many walls.
I mean, sometimes that makes me tear up. I don't know. Like, it may be because it was the last vestige of my youth, but yeah. You know, too many
too
walls.
Too many walls
have been built. Oh, anyway.
It's very wet and
winter,
wild.
Your jam is actually my true jam of this week, but I will let you have
this
it.
This is.
I love it, even though those people fucking tried to shade that shit on Twitter.
On SNL? Yes. Okay. And by the way, last week's episode of SNL was fire.
What, there's a Twitter controversy around Tame Impala?
Well,
people were like, I was like, have you never heard Tame Impala? This is how he sounds.
They're all like, why is he like trying to lean into the yacht rock?
Yeah, and it's just like, he's been doing this hardcore for...
What's up with people like him doing yacht rock?
If there's apparently a new graduating class of people that just entered into Twitter this year and has never actually heard of Tame Impala.
Oh, God.
And Sandra Oh hosted, and she was fantastic. And Bowen Yang's Kim Jong-un was...
Yeah.
Love as a sassy kind of gay dictator. Okay. It was very good. You have to check it out if you didn't get a chance. But
yeah,
Tame Impala performed. They have a new single. It's called Patience. I'm giving it like 75 quadrants.
Fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
It's everything we need right now.
It's April and they were like, Coachella's this weekend. You're listening to this 75 times down the 10. You've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, moi, Winter Mitchell-Rohrbaugh, with Margaret Wappler and Karen Tonson. Our theme music is by Party Booby Trap by Aussie Miso. Thanks for letting us continue to use it. Thanks to everyone for the 5-star reviews in iTunes. If you haven't already, get at it. This week, we'd like to thank... Why talk salads? Don't know. Pop culture is what drives the economy, politics, and sex more than we care to admit. And this podcast keeps me up to date. Up to date. They are doing the Lord's work, and it's very funny, too. Enjoy. Thanks, Jay McInerney. Dork About Town, Why Karen Tongson Matters. Congrats on your new book, Karen.
Thank you, boo.
Everyone go buy it now.
Please.
I love everyone else, too, and I miss Oliver, and I'm glad you do. And if you want us to hear your feedback or even ask the panelists for advice, no one's asked us for advice. Get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Pop Rocket. Or join our Facebook group. Please join our Facebook group. Like, pull your
there
shit
are people
together.
Who join.
And join the discussion. We're a production of MaximumFun.org. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.